Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 9th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, isn't it lovely out there? It's warming up. The sun is shining. I just want to go lie out on the hood of my truck and take a nap. But alas, I can't do that, actually. We'll have to do a show. Why not to talk about the weather with the meteorologist Jason Goff? He's here today to answer your questions. If you have a question about the weather, 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Take a nap after the show, right? Email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you wish. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Weather with Jason Goff coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff, who is ready to answer your weather questions. Formerly of News Channel 13, Jason's forecasts have been broadcast right here on these airwaves, and Jason runs a forecasting website at jasonsweather.com, which is a great resource. If you got a question about the weather, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or once again, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but that number is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff, welcome back to Vox Pop, sir.
Thank you very much, Ray. Always a great time to talk with you. Again, hopefully we'll be able to do this in person before too long, but for now, here we are.
We keep saying the same thing, but one of these days it will happen. You know, usually you're on, the weather, it's just dumb luck, but you're on and the weather's lousy. Today it is fantastic out there. How warm will it get this week before it cools down?
It is gorgeous. We actually, I still do a forecast every day and kind of keep track of things, and it actually looked like we were going to have more clouds today than we did, so this time of year, in the transitional season, sometimes cloud cover can be a little tough to forecast because you can get what's known as inversions, so you get moisture trapped underneath a stable layer of air, so there's really nowhere for it to go. But yeah, Today, we're full of sunshine, man, so that is a good thing. We've got, I'm just looking at the New York State Mesonet map now, all up and down the Hudson Valley, we're in the upper 40s, low 50s, even a couple of low 60s down in New York and on the western end of Long Island, so we're in good shape. Temperatures tomorrow and Thursday are actually going to be a couple of degrees milder. In fact, we'll undoubtedly see some of those 60s creeping their way farther up the Hudson Valley, at least.
Wow.
Tomorrow and in the first part of Thursday. So not too bad. It's, you know, it's a little too early yet to start doing any victory laps as far as the weather goes, because it is only the 9th of March. But yeah, Time is definitely on our side. I always told folks we're pretty much on the hook. Think of it like a bell curve from the middle of November to the middle of April. So certainly we're on the downside of that bell curve, and that's just fine with me, brother.
You know, March is a cruel month. I mean, you'll get a stretch like this, and then snow will happen again. And my wife said we actually are expecting some snow over the weekend or early next week. Is that true?
No, I haven't seen anything that would want me to jump up and down about that. It is going to cool off. Again, I mean, we're going to have days that are going to be back in the 30s. So this is definitely one of those, you know, enjoy it while it lasts kind of a thing. But, you know, perhaps as it looks now, maybe some elevation snow, I suppose, as we get into early next week. But there are other forecasts that are out there that basically give us, you know, just a nice quiet day with, you know, 30s and even a few low 40s. So, you know, in the transitional seasons, too, another difficulty in terms of forecasting is the farther out you go, the harder it is, which is always the case. But it's even more pronounced in the transitional seasons because one little sort of fly in the ointment, if you will, in the models can really throw off a whole lot as you get a little bit further out in time. So for now, I wouldn't worry about any snow shovels. Put it to you that way.
All right. Well, fair enough. And you didn't have to tell me twice. Jason Goff is our guest. We talk weather. We're actually now in meteorological spring, right?
Yes, we certainly are, which is great. It's a little bit easier to keep track of records and things that way. So meteorological spring runs through the end of May, and then meteorological summer begins on June 1st. So the meteorological seasons lag behind the astronomical seasons by about 3 weeks. So, but again, it's going to feel a heck of a lot more like spring, even more so tomorrow and on Thursday too. Where I think Thursday will be our mildest day of this little mini stretch before we cool off again as we get into the weekend. But even Friday, not all that bad.
Well, that's all right with me. We are joined today by meteorologist Jason Goff. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a weather question. You've been on a couple of times over the winter, but you were on somewhere around that huge storm we had in early December, I guess it was. And since then, we've had a little bit of snow here and there. Overall, in the Albany area, how have we been as far as the average for snowfall?
We're actually right now right on the nuggets, really, in terms of the actual amount for the season. Obviously, if we don't get any more snow, we'll end up a little bit behind. I'll have to check while we're talking. I'll do that. I'll check. But right now we're at about 54 inches.
Yeah.
And as we get into, deeper into the month and certainly into the month of April, our opportunities drop off even more. So, 54.1, which officially as of yesterday has us still 3.5 inches above average for the season.
Yeah.
But, when you're talking about, going out in time over the next week, 2 weeks, then we eat away at that surplus. And as I said, if we don't get another flake of snow or any more measurable snow, we'll end up about 5 inches or so below average for the season. But again, we're still on the hook for a good another, we'll call it 4 weeks, because the next week there's really not much to worry about.
Jason Goff joins us today. Let's check an email here, and then we'll go to the phones at 800-348-2551. This one is from Jacob in Cohoes. And Jacob writes, I have lived in Troy and Cohoes for the last few years. I've noticed that often when thunderstorms are on the way, they basically wrap around local urban areas. Is this from the storage of heat in urban buildings, or is something else going on? And that is from Jacob in Cohoes.
Hey, Jacob. Actually, really kind of none of the above. There is most definitely something that's called the heat island effect that you see in especially larger metropolitan areas like New York City, Chicago, but even in Albany, too, with all of the blacktop and concrete and, the buildings and everything that reflects the sun. But in terms of it actually controlling such a micro scale thing like a thunderstorm, really has nothing to do with it. The thunderstorms are going to flow according to the air above our heads, not necessarily because of what's going on the ground. The heat from the ground will get them going, but then they're going to be driven around by other factors. So there's no difference in, say, Cohoes or Troy as opposed to Averill Park or, Granville or Schuylerville or whatever. It's storms are going to happen wherever they're going to happen.
Let's grab one call before we take our first break, and then we'll hit the phones in earnest. Warren in Great Barrington. Warren, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Jason, I got a question, two questions, if I can fit them in here. First one, we're talking about inversions. Could you just talk about some of the more common ways that inversions happen or occur, maybe the three most common ways? And then second question, I don't know if you noticed, but there's been a lot of low pressure coming through. And when a low pressure system comes through, it sort of spins off and goes into the northern, northeastern Canada, and it sits there. And then it sometimes spins back and comes back towards us. And we get those constant sustained winds. And usually those low pressure systems seem to go off in the North Atlantic. Do you know why they're hanging out here longer than usual? It seems to be in the winter.
Yeah, it's not. I'll answer your second question first. That's not terribly unusual. What will happen is you'll get what's known as a blocking high that'll be over. You might have even heard it referenced as the Greenland high. So you just get a ridge of high pressure, and essentially it just acts like an offensive lineman and doesn't allow the flow of these storms. But that is the predominant direction by which storms in this part of the country will travel, right? They'll come, either across the mid-Atlantic and up the coast, or they'll come up the coast from the Carolinas or whatever, and they might hook into the Gulf of Maine, they might hook into eastern Canada, or they might take more of a right-hand turn over toward Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and keep on heading out if nothing is there to block them. But they certainly can sit and spin. That's sort of what we were dealing with. We had a couple of different low pressure systems that came through over the weekend, but that's why we had that sustained sort of cold that we had, which is why today feels even better, because we don't have that wind And we have, you know, temperatures in the 40s and some 50s around as well. As far as inversions go, they're more common, you know, in the overnight hours when the atmosphere quiets down. Generally speaking, as you go up in the atmosphere, things get colder, but you can have an inversion layer where you have warmer air at the surface, rather colder air at the surface, warmer air aloft. But things are just really kind of settled out. And so that is in essence what an inversion is. But this time of year, when you have that colder air below that warmer air that's just kind of hanging out, the colder air is going to condense the water vapor a lot easier, which is what's going to give you those clouds. And this is the type of year where we have lots of different temperature changes, if you will, not only from day to day, but even sometimes even hour to hour in the atmosphere as different air masses move in and out because, you know, again, things are changing as we're heading out of winter and into summer. This is that time of year where we'll have to deal with those things. I mean, you get them in, you know, obviously an inversion any time of the year as well. But that, you know, on a nice, quiet, calm morning is when you get all the dew on the grass in the summertime. That's basically what your inversion is.
Warren, thank you for the call. We got to take a break here. Jason Goff joins us today. We talk weather. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Jason Goff joins us today, and we talk about the weather. By the way, how is the website, jasonsweather.com, doing?
Oh, it's been going fine, Ray. We've got a good little system going where I do forecasts every Friday. They come out and at morning, early in the morning, they come out, and I put out an email as well to kind of accompany that. And I also put out things with the Times Union. So that's just a once a week thing. If we have some kind of special weather coming, as we've had a few times this winter, obviously I'll update as needed on a daily basis, even sometimes more than once. But there's also just, I really dig it. There's some really good stuff on there, especially if you look at the space weather page. There's some really neat, I put a new article up on there from a group that sent me something that they wrote, and it's just a really good article on stargazing. Whether you're a novice or an expert, I think there's a lot of cool stuff in there that you can go through and learn. So I just enjoy it. I put some stuff on there about our meteorological winter, sort of the statistics for that, to your point. After that big whopper of a storm that we had in the middle of December, we really have not gotten a whole heck of a lot since. So you can go on there, poke around, do whatever. And, of course there, I have my PPE available on there too. So there's all kinds of things to check out.
Jason's
weather geekiness at its best.
I like it. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. And before we get to the calls, once again, you are on, you know, you're on periodically every 3 or 4 months. And, before winter began, you said, okay, well, we have this La Nina, over in the Pacific, and it, you know, in the past has had some effects, some moderating effects on winters here. Now, we're not fully done, but have you seen that in the past couple of months?
Well, I mean, the La Nina is there. And the other thing that we talked about when we did discuss this was that generally, statistically, about 2 out of 3 years in a La Nina year for us end up with below average snowfall. So it's certainly not a lock that you're going to end up below average. And even, as we said, if we don't get another flake of snow between now and whatever Memorial Day, God forbid, we'll end up slightly below for the season. But that one big storm that we got was a pretty good one. And there were some other storms that did show up along the East Coast. So it was a fairly active winter, despite it being a La Nina event. So all in all, again, it'll go down as a pretty decent winter, with the exception of that storm that we had in December. That thing was an historical storm. I mean, I remember obviously the superstorm of 93. I mean, heck, even the storm we had last December was a pretty nasty one, but this thing really took the cake in terms of the amounts of snow that it dropped and the rates by which it did drop that snow. So, you know, it was all in all, a pretty good winter. We'll see what the next couple of weeks brings. But for now, you know, La Nina is kind of doing its thing, holding its own, and we'll see where things go from here.
Meteorologist Jason Goff joins us today. It's 800-348-2551. If you have a question, Pat in Middleburg. Pat, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a very basic question. I look at the weather in the newspaper and online and so on and so forth, and I see the word normal, and I'm wondering where the normal comes from. What is the normal referred to? Is it some kind of average over X many years, or what does normal
yes.
mean?
It is, and to your point, average is a better word than normal. I always like to say weather uh-huh. is never normal, nor is weather ever wild or wacky. Like, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, on news stations, locally, nationally, whatever, wild weather. No, it's just weather. Like, weather doesn't need any help in hyping, but it just kind of does its thing. So, yes, long answer to a short question, averages and normals are the same as it relates to this. And so what the Weather Service offices do, specifically the folks at Albany, every 30 year, the averages that are out comprise the last 30 years, and those are updated every 10 years. So decade, you have a new 30-year average that encompasses the last 10. So at any given time, you can look and say, okay, well, the average high for, I don't know this off the top of my head, but the average high for March 9th is, I'm guessing it's around, I don't know, 42, 43 degrees. That's based on the last 30 March 9ths.
I see. Okay, and they'll call that normal rather than calling it average over 10 years.
Yeah, the two words are used interchangeably, but it is truly an average.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Pat. We appreciate it.
Alrighty, you're welcome.
I don't know, though. I mean, there have been weather days where you're like, oh, this is wild weather. I mean, wind will come whipping through and the lightning and everything. I call it wild. I know that you're very precise, Mr. Goff. Rick in Stockbridge.
Well, yeah, that's a... That's my Felix Ungerness coming out there. Right? You know, certainly that derecho that we had in October, if ever weather was wild, that was wild.
Okay,
I'll grant you that.
All right, sometimes it can be. Rick in Stockbridge, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I've got a question I can't find any information on. I do a lot of telescoping, private shows and all that, public shows. And since nobody talks about them anymore, but those fires in California – during the summer and the fall, and also I guess Europe had their problems with fires also, that threw a lot of smoke and debris up in the air. We're still dealing with that, and ever since like September, I had a couple shows, and I'm actually looking at Jupiter, and I should be able to see the cloud bands and all that, but all it was a shimmering ball of orange because of all the dust and stuff up in the atmosphere. And I wonder if you've heard any information when this stuff might go away. And if it's up in the stratosphere, from which I read, it could stay up there for years. Because it's really affecting the viewing, the deep space objects and stuff like that. It's giving us beautiful orange sunsets, but it's starting to get in the way. That's my question.
Yeah, I'm not going to purport to know a ton about that, the astronomy piece of that and the stargazing. That's certainly not my expertise at all. But
did we lose Jason? We may have lost Jason. No, you're there, Jason. No. All right, well, hang on.
I've been waiting for years for this question.
All right, man. Well, listen, let's try to get Jason back on the line. Maybe he hit mute by mistake. And, I have seen volcanoes. There have been volcanoes here, not around here, but around the world lately. And that will throw particles way up, and it'll stay. It's like a nuclear winter. You set off a couple of atom bombs, and then you get debris that's up there, and it will cool things down. But let's see what Jason says. We're calling him back now. Hello, Jason. Are you still there, sir?
I'm here. I'm not sure what happened. A plug got pulled somewhere, but I'm back.
Okay.
So these fires, the soot from the fires are really affecting the atmosphere and the viewing. That's my question, if you have any idea if it's up in the stratosphere or when it may go away, I guess.
Well, what happens is with any kind of weather, like you'll see, if you've ever seen a picture of like a big thunderstorm from the plains I have a few, one in particular out of Lubbock, Texas, that it's just an amazing picture. When you see the tops of thunderstorms and they really flatten out, that is them basically bumping up to the top of the stratosphere and the bottom of the stratosphere. The stratosphere is a really stable layer of air. So for smoke to make its way up into the stratosphere, certainly there are particles that can do that. But what happens is when you do have these fires like we had in the summer and in the fall that did affect, I mean, we had the sunsets here for weeks that anybody could see, whether you were an observer or not, just say, wow, the sunset looks a little bit different today and yesterday and so on and so forth. But those smoke particles are going to dissipate eventually. So the fact that they're still around or you feel as though they may still be around and affecting that, it's just not something I'm aware of. That doesn't mean that it's not there. I just don't know much about that in terms of the longevity of smoke particles like that staying in the atmosphere. And it'd be difficult, not impossible, but difficult for them to make it to the stratosphere, as I said, just because it's almost like a ceiling that's very difficult to penetrate. In fact, the tops of the thunderstorms, like I was saying, they flatten out. Once in a while, you'll see these little, they kind of look like little pouches of these little spots of clouds that actually can poke their way up into the stratosphere, but they don't go very far.
Yep.
So for smoke particles to make it up in there, that's a possibility. But for them to exist for that long, I'm just not sure about that.
Okay, but it's still existing. Like today, it's a nice blue sky, but it's a lot of white in the sky, and you can really see it on the horizon.
That is a function, though, of we do have other weather going on, and so what you're seeing there is just clouds. Basically, you're seeing water in the atmosphere, and so that's certainly not an abnormal thing.
All right, Rick, thank you very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Jason Goff joins us today, and Alan is in Olive Bridge. Alan, you're on.
Hello. Hi, Jason. I'm going to tell you how much I enjoy listening to your forecasts. And in the 90s, I had a fairly big boat, and I was anchored. I was at a dock up in Saginaw. And it was about 5 in the morning, and all of a sudden, everything was so calm, and all of a sudden, the whole boat just, like, shook, you know. And I went out on the because everybody was asleep, and I'm like, what's going on? And it just, like, rocked. And there was nothing around to indicate anything, but it was – that was the time when that derecho went through the Adirondacks, and it was bad enough to cause a problem without even seeing anything there. So I would like to know the difference between – a derecho and a tornado, and if a derecho can spawn a tornado.
Okay.
Yes, that one that came through, first of all, I mean, you're not going to get any byproduct from a derecho. You're either going to get it or you're not, and you will know the difference. I assure you of that. The one that we had here in October was a different type, still a good example of that. So a derecho is essentially a line of thunderstorms that feeds itself, and it's able to continue to feed itself. I don't want to compare it to a hurricane because it's not a tropical entity, but it is able to sort of recirculate or recycle the water vapor, which is the fuel for these things, and they move at an incredible speed, anywhere from 65 to as much as 75 miles an hour, and they can cover in a huge distance, over 1,000 miles at times. So they can spawn tornadoes, certainly. They do. The one that we had here in October, the National Weather Service did a couple. I think there were actually two officially. Not that it really makes any difference in that regard, because the other straight-line wind damage actually did more than the tornadic damage. So that's the difference. Tornadoes are tiny in scale and can do obviously a heck of a lot of damage on their own. But this is a much more widespread damaging weather event that can cost billions and billions of dollars. And they have and they will continue to do so.
Does that mean that the movement of the tornadoes, what makes them on tornadoes, the derecho, is because of the air mass in front of it is so dry, or is it moist and it feeds?
No,
it causes it to feed.
There's a lot of instability involved with these, a lot of instability, and they're difficult to forecast too in advance. But once they get going, you can see them, just like the one that we had here in October. I could see it really starting to develop in central New York, and then they pick up and they just kind of bring on a life of their own. One of the bigger ones, in the biggest one I think on record now, is as it was out in Iowa last year. There was another one about maybe 7 or 8 years ago that went from Chicago to D.C., made it there in about 11 hours. I mean, you can't drive that distance in 11 hours. So they just continue to feed on themselves. A lot of straight line wind damage, and they do just an incredible amount of damage over a wide swath of area. Yeah.
Alan, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It is meteorologist Jason Goff today on the program, and John is in Hudson. John, you're on.
Hi, how you doing today?
Well, we're doing all right. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. I was up by Lake Champlain yesterday, took a drive to get vaccinated in Plattsburgh, and driving back, I noticed that the lake wasn't frozen, and I was wondering why and what effect that has on the surrounding area.
The whole lake wasn't frozen?
Most of it was not.
Okay. Well, I don't know a whole heck of a lot about Lake Champlain in terms of, certainly it freezes. It's been cold enough to freeze, I'll tell you that. So that's interesting. I know, Lake George sometimes, actually more times than not lately, has not completely frozen over, when there was a time where that was just extremely rare. Now it's more rare that it does freeze over all the way. But Lake Champlain is in a valley, so the temperatures are going to be higher there than they would be, say, in the Adirondacks, as opposed to, like a Long Lake or Indian Lake or someplace like that. But it's, I'm sure that there were at least parts of that lake that are still frozen over, the bay, some of the shallower bays. I mean, Lake Champlain is a very deep lake. It has, springs and all kinds of things that are going on. So that would be more of a question for a hydrologist, but I would tell you that certainly it was cold enough this winter, not abnormally so on either way, but it certainly was cold enough for the lake to freeze. So the fact that it was thawed out, it may have just been the parts that you saw. I'm not quite sure.
We took a day trip through Burlington, Vermont over the weekend, and I think there were some parts that were frozen, although I'm sure that John is right, and it wasn't the whole thing, but I recall seeing some frozen sections, and I know most of the ferries weren't running as far as I could tell. Deborah in Windham. Deborah, you're on.
Hi. So why did an area of upstate New York get 4 feet of snow? Because I'm in Windham, but Ashland was right in the center of that. So it showed like Slide Mountain, Big Indian, Oneonta, all got 4 feet of snow. I'm assuming accumulation. But why did we get so much snow?
Oh, you're talking about that big storm in December?
No, we got snow right through, like when they got snow in February, we got 20 inches. Other people got 18 or less, but we got the most snow up by Windham.
Well,
these storms, we also got a lot after that.
Yes. Well, I mean, certainly because you're up, when you're up in Ashland up there, you're up at a higher elevation. And not only that, snowstorms are not just sort of these uniform blanket events where everybody gets the same. It depends obviously on the temperature. That's a headache sometimes when you're trying to forecast these things, like who gets a mix or rain or sleet, and then who gets all snow. But with that particular storm, I'm thinking of the same one that you are, just going off of memory, that had more to do with the track of the storm, which was mainly to our south. Mm-hmm. And so parts of the area south of Albany did much better than certainly the valley did. And then even as you headed farther north up into, say, parts of like Fulton and Montgomery counties and those spots just because they were farther away from the storm. But within these storms themselves, especially when you're on that fringe, there are bands that can form, and they're small scale little bands of snow, and they can be very intense, and they can drop a lot of snow in a short amount of time. You have different pockets of energy that might be able to get more lift. Also, another consideration when you're forecasting snowfall is where are the best snow growth zones, and how does that all line up? Because obviously, if you have, you know, a lot of snowflakes that are decent size and you've got plenty of moisture, you're going to pile up a lot of snow in a short amount of time. So there are a lot of considerations there. But if you look at any map, certainly the storm that we got in December is a good example of that, because there are some places that got twice as much snow as others. And even though everybody got pounded with that storm, it had to do with where the best snow growth was, where the best energy was. There was plenty of moisture all around, but then it's how do you use that moisture? How efficient are parts of the storm at doing that? So you were kind of, well, depending on how you look at it, yeah. You were in the lucky spot or the unlucky spot by getting as much as you did.
Deborah, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a break here. Jason Goff is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. You can email us at voxpopwamc.org. And we'll open the email bag in a moment. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Jason Goff is here. We talk weather, and the email bag is now open. This one's from Anonymous. Well, the person goes by the name R.C. Cola, so I assume it's not that person's real name. Simple but eloquent question. I'm not sure you can answer it, Jason. Why the hell is the weather so crappy sometimes? And that's from R.C. Cola.
You know, how many years have we been doing this show, Ray?
A long time, yeah.
That's probably the most straightforward, interesting question we've had maybe ever.
Yeah, well, how do you answer it, though? So...
Well, I have a lot of answers, but I suppose the most simple one and the best one for public radio is it just is what it is, man.
It is what it is, and also one person's crappy is another person's quite nice. So, I mean, you know... I know people who like rain, right?
That you are absolutely right, and people that know me and my weather taste know that I am in the minority in this area, because I love the heat and the humidity. The more, the better. And a lot of times when I say that to people, they look at me like I have, as Ralphie says, lobsters crawling out of my ears. But so it just depends. You're exactly right. One person's weather, good weather, is another person's not so good weather.
Okay, this one's from Brian. Maybe this one is a little more concrete of a question. Brian writes, I follow a meteorologist on social media who talked at length about downsloping limiting our snow totals in the capital region this year. I was wondering if you could describe what downsloping is. Also, why did it seem as if southern New York got hit harder with some of the more recent storms when usually larger snow totals seem to be to the north? And that's from Brian.
Right, those are all good questions. The second question's answer is that a lot of it had to do with the track of the storms.
Right.
As we were talking about with the woman from
Windham.
She was up in
Windham.
The Catskills there,
yeah.
Now, Ashland and Windham. So, you know, it has to do with the track of the storm. So, yeah, southern New York did really well. New York City had some pretty decent snows this year, whereas some years they don't. And then as far as downsloping goes, downsloping, first of all, it's a really hard thing to forecast, but it is a real thing, and it'll happen. There have been some snow events here where, and I'll give you an example, like Averill Park will get a foot and Albany will get 2 or 3 inches. And
yeah.
The reason for that is called downsloping. When you're talking about physics, it's actually a something that's known as compressional heating. And what happens is when you put air into a tire, for example, you're compressing it, right? Because it's going to be in that confined space, so it's going to heat up.
Yeah.
And as air comes over a mountain, so if you have, let's say, an easterly wind, And that's the challenge in forecasting these things, is what is the wind direction going to be? You'll get this downsloping where the wind will come down off of the Berkshires, off of the hills into, you know, Columbia, Rensselaer counties, you know, down from the Rensselaer Plateau. And essentially what you're doing is you're heating that air. Not that you're going to be able to be outside in shorts and a T-shirt, but in heating that air up, that means that it's going to be able to absorb more water vapor, which means that's less snow that's going to come out and fall down to the ground. So that's what happens. We had one of those storms that we had recently, it may have been the most recent one that we had that was decent. The Weather Service did a really good job of forecasting the downsloping there, because there were places that were up in Washington County, even eastern Saratoga County, that only got a few inches, and then other spots got double digits. And that was purely a result of downsloping.
Interesting.
Because of the way that the storm was positioned and the way that the wind was coming down, in that case, off of the Greens.
This email from Elisa. Elisa says, it seems like the air quality has been poor for months. Is this unusual for Albany?
Well, I can't speak to that. I don't know of the air. You know, we certainly haven't had any air quality alerts out. There are websites out there that you can check out that monitor the air quality. But all in all, I mean, this year hasn't been different from any other. Even when we were talking about the fires earlier, that didn't really affect our air quality because it was so high up in the sky. Yeah. So I'm not really sure. I wouldn't say that this year is any better or worse than any other.
All right. And last email here, this is from Mark, and he references something I talked about this morning when I was guest hosting the roundtable. Did you happen to hear any reports on jasonsweather.com from people in the North Country, say Vermont or northern New England, who saw the meteor on Sunday?
No, I did not. I have not heard of that.
Okay. Well,
I'd like to see a picture of it if somebody had it.
I don't know. You know, there are so many security cams now. Maybe somebody caught it. But apparently it was, according to the Weather Service, I believe, it was about 6 inches in diameter. And it exploded with the force of about 440 pounds, I think, of TNT. So it was heard over a wide area. And, you know, a lot of people saw it. It was 5:38 p.m. on Sunday, but, you didn't. And I'm sure someone will email you now at jasonsweather.com, and you'll find out more about it. Let's go to Andy in Plattsburgh. Andy, you're on. Hello, Andy.
Hi. How you doing, Ray?
Good.
Listen, I live on Lake Champlain, and to the fellow's question about the ice.
Yeah.
It comes and goes with the south wind. Lake Champlain is 120 miles long and has a north-south fetch. So you could have 8 or 10 inches of ice out on the lake, even all the way out to Broad Lake. And a good south wind will come up, and next thing you see is the ice will start to buckle and will be taken out instantly. Within hours, you'll see it all go. This year, we didn't have a complete freeze over. I think the last one was 2015. And so it really has a lot to do with the wind as well as the temperatures.
Mm.
The other day, it was cold a couple of days, and we had ice again forming a couple inches thick. But a north wind came in and took it all out. So
you know,
you have to trust the wind as being one of the big effects.
It has been decades since I've been up there, and as I said, I was driving around just on a day trip, but never got out of the car, went all the way to Burlington and back. God, Lake Champlain is magnificent. I've forgotten how great it is.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. And a world-class fishery, too,
really,
which is great.
World-class fishing, too, huh? I did not know that.
Yes.
Hey, let me ask you a question, Andy. Did you ever see the monster up there?
No, and I think most of the people who have seen it have been tipping a few back.
Ah, well, that does happen up there. Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. The number is 800-348-2551. We may or may not have lost Jason Goff again. Jason, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Oh, good. Oh, excellent. Superb. Your name disappeared from the screen, but you're still here, and that's what counts. Charlie in Cahoes. Charlie, you're on. Hey,
yes,
Charlie, you got to turn that radio. Charlie, can you turn the radio down there, Daddy?
Yes, down. Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Listen, this is good. I just turned on the radio, and you got a weather guy on. This is good. I had an experience yesterday.
Uh-oh.
That is very bizarre to me.
All right.
It took me a while to get my senses together on this. I was walking home yesterday morning. It was breezy, but it wasn't windy at all. There might have been a slight breeze. It was clear, and I was in Cohoes walking towards the railroad tracks from Remsen Street down the hill. And I looked up, and on the other side of the railroad tracks was a dust devil.
A dust devil.
It was a funnel cloud, and it looked like smoke. And it was about 30 feet tall, and it was not debris. It wasn't leaves. It looked like smoke. I thought someone had a fire going over there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first thing that came to mind, and I'm watching it. It was very slow. It stayed in one position, then it moved slowly south, and then it just disappeared. I've never seen anything like it, and I know what dust devils look like. This looked like a cloud of smoke. Any explanation?
Wow.
No, I would say.
I had my camera with me.
You had your camera?
I had my camera, and I'm always ready. I got one photo, but it came out blurry. I was too late. The sun was kind of in my eyes, and I just shot it that way. It's not a good image.
So you really think it was 30 feet tall? Jason, have you heard of the like?
I have not, but, you know, again, you can get, even on clear days.
It looked like smoke, though. It wasn't leaves or debris. It looked like smoke.
Huh.
It was white. Well, it was a white cloud.
Wow. Maybe someone was making a sword. All right, go ahead, Jason.
You know, air obviously is clear, so if there was any coloration in it, it had to have picked up something, you know, in order for that to happen. And it's possible that, you know, it might have, depending on where it formed and the orientation of all of that, excuse me, it might have been able to form some of its own clouds, I suppose, as it was in there. But without seeing it, I really couldn't say.
All right, Charlie, that's a very interesting call, and good luck. You all right, Jason? You need a lozenge or something?
Yeah, I'm just going to grab a little sip of water.
Yeah, why don't you do that? We'll wait.
All right,
y'all
good
set?
To go.
Wet the old whistle. Let's go to Richard. Richard, where are you calling from?
Whitesboro, New York.
All right, you're on.
Whitesboro. Okay, good, thanks. I've been always wondering here about a couple of things and what the differences are. I hear them talk about the polar vortex and the jet stream. And I was wondering, first, what's the difference, and how does that jet stream keep the country divided so neatly? It's like somebody draws a line from the West Coast to the East Coast or down to Florida, and how does it keep the cold north and the heat south?
Hmm.
Well, first, there are actually, for us, there are two jet streams. You have the polar jet and the subtropical jet stream, and the polar jet this time of year is more dominant, obviously, than the subtropical. So that really is the dividing line between colder air and warmer air, to kind of put it simplistically in that regard. So, but the jet stream wraps around the world. So wherever it kinks, you know, weather, what goes up must come down, always in the world of weather, right? So if you have a really cold area, you know, let's say we're having record cold here in the Northeast, somewhere in the world, maybe even somewhere in the country, they're having record heat. So that's sort of how that works. So it is a dividing line, but it's certainly never like a nice, neat, straight line. Well, I shouldn't say never. Once in a while, you can get what's called a nice zonal flow, and that's just a straight west to east, and the country's quiet. There's no real weather going on or something like that. But the jet stream plays a huge role in our weather in lots of different ways, everything from supplying cold air or allowing warmer air to come in, to supplying energy, which can help to spawn, you know, thunderstorms or whatever the case may be. As far as the polar vortex goes,
is this like a...
Go ahead, Richard.
Go ahead.
Is this like the net result of high pressure and low pressures?
Yeah, I mean, the jet stream is basically a river of air that sits up at about, well, it varies, but let's say around 38 to 40,000 feet or so. And so it is going to react, if you will, based on what other things are going on in the atmosphere. The Earth is so in sync and connected
which is why it's always important to understand that the term global actually means global, right? One implication has another implication somewhere else. Just like I said, some spot can have record cold, somewhere else is having record heat. So as far as the polar vortex is concerned, that's a little bit of a different story. You can kind of think of it as a jet stream in a sense, but it is a conveyor belt of really of air, and it's the faster it spins and the tighter it is, the more it stays up close to the North Pole. It's what happens is sometimes those winds slow down or they can even reverse, and that's when you get what they call, you know, these things that'll break off. You'll hear that term sometimes, you know, parts of the polar vortex have broken off, and then that will allow that colder air to come in. The jet stream will allow that colder air to come down, and it can break off and bring, you know, really nasty cold to the Midwest, to the Northeast, to Europe, wherever. So it's always, everything is always in flux. But if the polar vortex is good and healthy, it's going to keep that colder air, that really cold, frigid air bottled up north. And then the jet stream is going to continue to do its thing, but it will also sometimes break off. That colder air will come down and the jet stream will allow that colder air to come in. And I might open the door for some snow here. You know, that's one of those things that we'll have to deal with in any given winter.
Richard, thank you very much for the call. By the way, offhand, Jason, do you know the latest measurable snow in any given season in Albany area?
Our latest here for this season right now is 54.1 inches.
No. What I mean is, at what date in the year is the latest measurable snow that you've seen in history?
Oh, I believe that there was a trace of snow on May 28th. I'd have to double check that, but I think May 28th. Now, of course, a lot of folks will remember the snow. I believe it was in 2002 where we had a couple of inches of wet snow here on May 18th.
Yeah.
And that was really something else, because that wasn't just like a sort of a novelty, hey, look at this, we have snow in May.
Yeah.
That disrupted a lot of stuff. I mean, I heard, again, I was living in Texas at the time, so it was a heck of a lot warmer down there than it was here. But I had heard that, you know, the RPI graduation, they had a big tent that collapsed.
Oh, boy.
And all kinds of nasty things. So I'm buying some time here just to verify that for you, Ray. Just
well, we're almost,
you know,
out of time, so you better either make it in the next 10 seconds or we'll make it for homework for the next show.
Well, okay, we can do that. But, yeah, it was 2.2 inches of snow. The most snow we ever had in the month of May was 5.4 inches. That was back in 1945. But May snowfall is a rare one, to be sure.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for being here. Once again, the website is what?
Jasonsweather.com. Go check it out. There's all kinds of good stuff on there.
Hey, thanks so much, Jason. We will talk to you soon. One of these days you'll be in the studio. But if not, we'll catch you on the phone. And thanks again. Support comes from Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York. Farm Cidery opens 7 days, offering local hard cider, merchandise, and apparel. Also through shipping, ninepincider.com. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans. Hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons. Grapesandgrainswine.com. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Once again, thanks to Jason Goff for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jayshree Sukram answered the phones. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, you know, this guy comes on every year or so, and it's great musician. Tony Levin is here. He's got a new book of photographs about life on the road. We'll talk about that book tomorrow. Right now, stand by for the book show.